I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport with branches throughout the region. We welcome back on Connections Gloucester Times journalist Taylor Ann Bradford, who has been, well, we haven't talked with her in a couple of weeks due to vacations here and there. Welcome back, Taylor Ann.
Hey, thanks so much, Rick. I'm glad to be back.
Indeed, and I hope you got some rest and what's it called, refreshing, rejuvenation, all that good stuff during the week.
Oh, yeah, it was great. I was up in Vermont and able to really explore the beautiful nature over there and that neck of the East Coast. So
excellent.
It's great.
Excellent. Well, you know, the news continues, and now that you're back at it this week, so much to cover, and we've had to pare it down because you've got so much stuff going on here. And I want to ask you about the article you wrote earlier in the week about a report coming out of the city, that the city report, there were complaints filed against the mayor, there was some kind of an independent investigation, and maybe you could catch me up on all that, what's going on.
Yeah, so as you know, this has been month-long coverage on our part of the complaints that were filed, three hostile work complaints that were filed by the harbor master, the TJ Shimitaro, development director Jill Cahill, and a former HR director, Donna Leet, all filed, HR complaints against the mayor for various reasons. And because of that investigation took place, the investigation concluded. The mayor, released a statement on Facebook with her acceptance of the findings, had her attorney write up a summary and posted that. However, at the time, the complainants never got anything other than her attorney's summary. They never got the investigation or anything in addition to that. And so as everyone was calling for this investigation to go public, the city continually said that they were not going to release it. And then actually the Gloucester Daily Times appealed to the state requesting that this entire investigation report done by Regina Ryan be made accessible to the public after the city had denied our public records request for that document. And so the state came back. Massachusetts Secretary of State stated that they would uphold our appeal, and they said that they gave the city 10 business days to issue a formal response with the original request that they had originally denied. And so all that to say is that the city did release those documents to us earlier this week, and there is, it's an interesting conversation, Rick, because we now have the documents, which, it outlines all the narratives that we've been reporting, over the past couple of months, but again, in much further detail. But the unfortunate thing with what the city provided us with, and that spoke with some of the complainants, and they, really agree in, is that the documents that the city gave us earlier this week still have redactions in them, which makes it complicated because it's not the full report. It is, the majority of it, but they redacted third-party names, language used by the mayor, and exhibits that reference specific incidences of, the accusations and different events that culminate into this investigation. And so after receiving it, spoke with the different people who had filed the complaints, and they all kind of explained that they are frustrated by the fact that this isn't the full report that the state had said to release. And so I reached out to the city. The city again said that they are going to only give us what they sent us earlier this week. And our company has decided to appeal yet again to the state to say, we want the full report with no redactions. So that narrative, one is now that it's an ongoing discussion, and we're waiting to hear back from the state and their response as we hope to get the full narrative, not just a redacted version. But again, in that report that they did give us, it does show you a lot, and that can all be found on our website, of the narratives and kind of understanding a little bit more context to this these accusations and what happened as we continue to look more into the story of the past couple of months, past couple of years of what's going on in City Hall.
Mm-hmm. When you say you talk with the city and you talk with the state, in particular with the city, is it the attorney's office, the city attorney that you talk with, their office, or is it someone at City Hall? How does that work from a journalistic viewpoint?
Yeah, so I reached out to a couple different people. Again, it's more my editor who reaches out to the state and deals with that stuff, so I really focus on the specifically the city side.
Mm-hmm.
And I reach out because this is something that the city's legal department has been heading up as they, you know, it's them and then outside legal. I reached out specifically to outside legal, and then when they referred me to the city's legal, I contact Chip Payson for that. He's the city's general counsel, who has been, dealing with this. And so, he's the one who notified me earlier this week that they would not be, handing over any further documentation other than what they provided to us earlier this week.
All right. So again, we, we'll stay tuned for that because, there could be more coming out. And, I know the public is probably interested, especially where this is, we're rapidly approaching election season, so stay tuned. Watch the Gloucester Times for that. Now we move on to something that I find of interest, I guess humorously, until maybe you dig into it, but what is the cupcake incident involving Gloucester City councilors?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it really goes back all the way back in March, and I want to emphasize, too, that the name of cupcake incident, you know, that terminology stemmed from a few city councilors who, you know, were referencing it here and there. But the actual incident happened back in March at a March 1st Ordinance and Administration Standing Committee meeting where councilors Melissa Cox and Jennifer Holmgren sitting in for Councilor Steve LeBlanc went back and forth about parliamentary procedure. Cox told Holmgren that she was just an alternate cupcake within the incident. Cox then apologized while City Clerk Joanne Sinas explained procedure for motions and amendments because that's kind of what they were disputing. At the following ONA meeting, Holmgren popped on her Zoom screen with a cupcake in hand and proceeded to eat the whole thing during the meeting, later posting a photo of the cupcake on Facebook with an explanation that she ate it on screen as a response to disrespectful behavior. So it's a very specific instance, and when it first happened, I was watching the meeting. And we didn't report on it because it was, as Scott Memar says, you know, it was, you know, in full, it seems like a relatively innocent interchange between counselors. You know, it was a dispute, and it was something that, you know, they had to work through over and on public, in, mm-hmm. like in the public. But it didn't seem like, you know, something that, as we're now learning, would cost the city almost $14,000. So the incident occurred, the number of incidents occurred, and then the city, conducted an investigation or had an outside legal, do an investigation of the incident after a complaint was filed. So we found out, so this narrative happened of the cupcake incident. So that's one part of the pie, but then, you know, we're now realizing that this one incident, is kind of the thing that started an investigation that has already costed the city a total of $13,479. And so we found this out at a Budget and Finance Standing Committee earlier this month where the CFO, John Dunn, provided the Standing Committee these numbers stating, you know, that they had hired, that there was an outside investigator from New Hampshire-based attorney Pastore Kranz conducting it, and that it was expected that the report be done by the end of July. However, they not received any of that information. So it's an interesting thing, and I think what brings this to an even more interesting conversation is that the Budget and Finance Standing Committee that signs off on such expenditures didn't know about this.
Okay.
So this whole incident happened. The city spent this money, but the Budget and Finance Standing Committee is just finding out about this after the fact that the city's already spent the money.
Who instigated an investigation for someone saying cupcake and then someone eating a cupcake as an exchange? Because, you know, I watch the British Parliament sometimes on the BBC, and, man, it's pretty raucous when they have the Prime Minister meetings back and forth with the Right Honourable so-and-so. And to me,
I'm baffled as to who initiated an investigation. What are they investigating?
That's a great question, and that's a question that John McCarthy, who's on the standing committee, asked. And so I'm eager for the next budget and finance committee meeting to see if they talk about just that, because he wrote out a list of questions at the past one saying, you know, he finds that the amount of money unbelievable for what they were looking at, and he has so many questions, including who's running the investigation, who's authorizing the spending, and what authority they have in investigating these elected officials, who he says, you know, it should be done all in public because it happened at a public meeting with public officials. And unlike, you know, city employees, public officials don't, from what he understands, don't have the privacy that city employees do. So any investigation should be done in public because it's to do with city elected officials that are dealing with taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions there that are left unanswered. I know I received a message from Holly Dugwillow, who's the current HR director over the city, and she stated that the bill to date from last fiscal year was paid through the personnel department. And so that's the information that we have right now. Mm-hmm. The specifics to that we don't have on hand right now as it's ongoing. But yeah, it's a great question of who initiated this and kind of what are the contents of this investigation. That's another investigation that I think is important for the public to see the contents of, especially as it is the taxpayers' money dealing with, you know, public officials' dispute.
Yeah.
So this is, oh yeah.
Well, I'm gonna link the article. We'll have it up here with this podcast. I'll link your article in the podcast and or on the post. And it just, you know, it's just amazing to me that no punches were thrown. So it's like, no blood was drawn. I don't know. Kind of humorous on the one hand, but on the other hand, what the bozo are they investigating? Okay, well, stay tuned. Again, Taylor Ann Bradford, Gloucester Times journalist, has that article up there to date, and she'll be doing more. And finally, Taylor Ann, kind of a very disturbing story this morning on Thursday in the Gloucester Times regarding one of the mayor's aides, a very nice young man who's contracted COVID.
Yeah, so really sad to hear that Chris Sicuranza, who's the assistant to the chief administrative officer, had a breakthrough case of COVID-19 earlier this week. He announced it on Facebook stating that he tested positive on Tuesday and that he received both Pfizer vaccine shots and just got the bad news. So this man, he's had both vaccines. He's quite diligent in, you know, ensuring that, you know, as they work to mitigate the spread of COVID-19, and he still got COVID. I had a chance to correspond with him yesterday, and he said, you know, that that city, they take health safety protocols very seriously, and when people don't feel well, they should isolate and get tested and follow the protocols just like he did. You know, the moment he found out, he isolated. He was happy to hear that, you know, he kind of contacted everybody that he had been in contact with this past weekend. And they all tested negative, which is really good. And, you know, he's just staying home and, you know, trying to make sure to get better. And as of right now, he said he has mild symptoms, but nothing more than that. And so this is, again, it's a conversation of, you know, anyone can get COVID. And I know this is a conversation that can be controversial for a lot of people, especially for people who don't want to get the vaccine or people who do want to get the vaccine. It kind of goes back and forth about, you know, does the vaccine actually help? And for Chris Sicuranza, he's urging people to get the vaccine because he's saying, you know, getting the vaccine really helps keep people out of hospital. So while people are still starting to get COVID, they are only have mild cases or asymptomatic, and it's still important for them to isolate so they don't spread to people who might not be vaccinated. And I touched base with the mayor to kind of talk about what it looks like for the city hall, as, you know, Chris does work in the offices. And she noted that anyone who tests positive, it's been the same thing that they've been doing for the past year and a half. You know, they isolate, they contact trace, they test people, or they ask people to get tested, and, you know, they continue to stay safe, but they're following CDC guidelines. And as they go forward, they continue to urge people to get vaccinated. As quote, the mayor is saying, it's not just for your safety, but for your family, friends, and everyone you meet. And I was really happy to hear that Chris Sicuranza, while, you know, dealing with COVID, is doing well, and he has you know, a great nurse at home, which is his little dog. And, you know, that's just such a great thing. As a dog lover myself, it's always great to hear those canine companions that I believe his daughter's name is Lulu, and just so great to hear, you know, the sense of humor and the sense of home in the midst of a really turbulent and hard time. So we wish Chris Carranza the speedy recovery, and we're eager to keep going forward as people continue to navigate this pandemic.
I'll second that. Okay, it comes now to time to tease your column, your weekly column on the outdoors. And while you're away, you had some interesting correspondence from people. Tell us a little bit about maybe what might be coming up in the future.
Yeah, so we had a call of the wild while I was away, just because as we're ramping up for election season and I want to get outside as much as possible to review local trails, I also know that there's a lot more people who've been living here longer who have a lot to say about the wilderness here in Cape Ann. And so kind of put out a call for submissions for anybody who is interested in contributing to the Woods to the Writing Desk this fall. Always looking for people who have songs, poetry, writings, articles, reflections, photos, paintings, things that they want to share with the wider community of why they love the outdoors or reflections that they've had out in the wilderness. And so with that being said, I've received a number of submissions so far, and these are, again, rolling submissions. I'm eager to accept them throughout the entirety of the year, and have received poems and songs already about people's recoveries from certain instances, from just an abundant love for the city. And, you know, a few songs here and there that have been covered by a few bands here in the city as well. So excited to share those with the community and however that manifests in the next couple of months. But I just want to let people know that we'll continue to be walking the woods and eager to do that alongside you as well.
All right. Another informative session with Taylor Ann Bradford, Gloucester Times journalist. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Flashdown, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.